This parak is going to be speaking about different things about Lashon Hara. That's what the topic of the parak is, Lashon Hara. It's an introduction to the next parak, which is a specific story about Lashon Hara, the story of Miriam and Aaron saying Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu, which we started in parak Yudala. One of the recurring themes of parak Yudala is the 10 times that Hashem... It says about Hashem coming down to the world, Yerida, a lesson of Hashem coming down and, you know, very openly intervening in the world. So the Medrash is going through a list of that. So one of those 10 times is going to be the story of Miriam saying Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's going to be the next parak. So like as an introduction to that story, the Medrash over here is going to speak about Lashon Hara in other stories and whatever. As an introduction to the parak, I wanted to say a few words about Lashon Hara in general and how it relates to the time of the year that we're holding in right now. So we'll start with that. Stam, a story. Last year, so I'm in a program in Or HaSameach called Or LaGola, where we have, like, you know, it's mostly married men, and we have, like, different advanced classes for, like, rabbinic training and stuff like that. So last year we were sitting around this time of the year discussing, like, we had a little an open slot, so we're discussing what type of class should we add to fill that open slot in the curriculum. So there was it's mostly married guys. So there's two bachram in the chabura. So there's one of the bachram opened up his mouth and he said, "Oh, it's shevim, so we should learn about Lashon Hara." And then, like, that's what he said. "Oh, it's shevim, we should learn about Lashon Hara."
Shevim has to do with...
So everyone sort of like gave him like this funny look, like, "What does shevim have to do with Lashon Hara?" But, like, nobody wanted to say anything to him because he's a pacher, he's innocent, he doesn't know what he's talking about. So, like, he thinks, yeah, that's what shevim is, Lashon Hara. So that was everyone's initial reaction. But when that happened, I was thinking to myself, so, like, these guys don't realize it, and the guy who said it probably himself doesn't realize it, but there is a connection between Tyrus and Mishpacha and Inyani Kedusha and the idea of not speaking Lashon Hara. That's what I want to speak about. A lot of these ideas are based on the teachings of Rav Moshe Shapiro Zatzal. So that's sort of where I'm coming from. It's an interesting phenomenon, calendrical phenomenon about Shavuot. And what, for the uninitiated, what's Shavuot? Shavuot is the Rizal revealed that the weeks that we read the parshas of Shmoyis Va'era Bay B'Shalach Yisrael Mishpatim are specially mesugal to do what's called Tikkun HaYisayid, the fixing of the Yisayid, the Midah of Yisayid. Right? That's the Rizal writes. So these are the weeks of Shmoyis Va'era Bay B'Shalach Yisrael Mishpatim and Rosh Hashanah of those parshas is Shavuot. As an interesting thing, Shavuot is dependent on the week of the parsha of the week. So it doesn't really fit so much into a set time in the calendar. But every year...
Well, it would, because every year you read...
Right. So
the calendar hasn't changed yet.
Right. So basically what it is that every year, Shevivim will start before the month of Shvat, sometime in the month of Tevis, and then continue through the entire month of Shvat. This year it ends with the last day of Shvat, but usually it also goes into the, like, the first week or two of Adar, especially if there's two Adars, whatever. Right, that's the idea. So there's a special connection between the idea of Shevivim and the month of Shvat. So what's the connection between Shevivim and the month of Shvat? So what's the idea of the month of Shvat? What does the month of Shvat represent? The month of Shvat represents Machlokes in the beginning of Maseches Rosh Hashanah, that in the month of Shvat is Rosh Hashanah for the fruits of the tree, right? What day of the month of Shvat is it? So that's Machlokes B'Shamah B'Yisrael. B'Shamah is the first of Shvat, which was earlier today, Rosh Chodesh Shvat. B'Yisrael holds that it's Tesvav Shvat, Tu B'Shvat, the 15th of Shvat, right? That's how we pass on L'Maisa. But there's the idea that when you the theme of Shvat is bringing in the peiros, bringing in the fruits of the tree, right? And the idea of creating fruit, of creating a proper offspring, is something that's associated with what we call a tzaddik, because the pasuk says tzaddik katamar yifroch, a tzaddik sprouts out like a date fruit. So that's the idea of a tzaddik is making off fruit. We'll explain exactly what way a tzaddik makes off a fruit. But that's the idea of a tzaddik. The quintessential tzaddik, the quintessential tzaddik is Yosef HaTzaddik, right? He's called Yosef HaTzaddik in Chazal and in Piyutim that we say he's called Yosef HaTzaddik. He's the quintessential tzaddik. The idea of tzaddik is also kashur to what we call the sphere of Yisoid. We've spoken in the past about Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferes, that Chesed is a focus on the giving, on the Mashpia. Gevurah is a focus on the receiver or holding back Hashpa. Tiferes is that perfect storm, the happy medium between giving and receiving in a balanced way. That's what Tiferes is. And in the same way that Tiferes does that, is the middle of Chesed and Gevurah, so Yisoid is the same thing, because it goes Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferes, and then Netzach and Hoid is on the next Darga, and then Yisoid is the third one of those, so Yisoid is the continuation of Tiferes. So Yaakov, if Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov is Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferes, so when Yosef comes along, Yosef is a continuation of Yaakov. He mimics Yaakov. El tell this Yaakov, Yosef. So if Yaakov is Tiferes, Yosef is Yisoid. Right? Tzadik Yisoid Olam. So there's the connection between the Tzadik and this Midah of Yisoid. It's the foundation. Right? That's the idea of Yosef HaTzadik. And we say by the Ushpizin on Sukkot, so the 7 days of Sukkot, and the Mukubalim in Nusach Sfarad has it that the 7 days of Sukkot, we have the seven Ushpizin correspond to the seven spheres. So the first three is Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, right? And then that's Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferes. And then you have Moshe, Aaron, David. Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, David. Right? So Yosef is the sixth one. And the sixth one is the sphere of Yisoid. So Moshe, Aaron is Hoyden, Netzach, and Hoyd. And then Yosef is the sixth one, which is the idea of Yisoid. And that's associated with the month of Shvat. Yosef is associated with the month of Shvat. Why? Because there's two ways. We know that there's 12 months, and then there's 12 Shvatim. And there's different ways of making the 12 months correspond to the 12 Shvatim. There's one way that you count the 12 Shvatim in the order of how they traveled in the Midbar. So according to that, the order would start with Yehuda. Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, and then Reuven, Shimon, Gad, etc. That's one way of counting the months of the year. The other way of counting the months of the year is the order of birth. So the first one is Reuven, Shimon, Levi. Reuven, Shimon, Levi is Nisan. Reuven, Shimon, Levi is Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, etc. Right? If you do that, Yosef.
How is Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan? Chayyeh, that's Tammuz of Elul.
What?
Reuven is connected to Chayyeh, that's Tammuz of Chayyeh, no?
There's two ways to count it. You can count it either. It is Nisan Yehuda, because Yehuda was the first one to travel, or is Nisan Reuven, because Reuven was the first one born. So if you go in the order of birth, and that's the order that the Sefer Yetzirah goes with, so it comes out that Shvat, which is the 11th month, corresponds to Yosef HaTzadik, who was the 11th child born to Yaakov
Avinu. You don't do Ephraim and Menashe.
Right, you don't do Ephraim and Menashe. You're doing Levi. Right, you put Levi in, and Yosef is counted.
I saw both ways over there in Yetzirah.
Okay. Could be he talks about both, but there's an idea that Yosef is kashur to the month of Shvat in this way. And the idea is pashut because Yosef is called a tzaddik, he's someone who was midas ha'yisoid, because Yosef had the opportunity to be mashpia with Ashes Petifar, and he was able to hold himself back and not do it. So because he did that, he was channeling his ability to be mashpia in a kosher way instead of in a non-kosher way. That's the idea. That's why Yosef is the paragon of the tzaddik yisoid olam, right? And when Yosef wanted to reveal himself to his brothers, so he said, "Kifia medaber aleichem, my mouth is speaking to you." Rashi and Ramban say that what did Yosef do? He showed them two things: one, that he spoke lashon hakodesh, and one, that he spoke, that he had a bris milah. So we'll get back to in a few moments. But these are the two elements where the tzidkus of a tzaddik manifests itself in the area of speech and in the area of reproduction. Right, Yosef spoke Lashon HaKodesh, meaning he was speaking in a positive way. He connected himself to positive speech. And he had a bris milah, meaning he was showing his brothers that he used his reproductive powers or abilities for good and not for bad. Right? And on the other hand, Yosef's brothers, so they looked at Yosef in sort of in the opposite way. They looked at him that he was saying Lashon Hara about them. Right? And as a result of saying that, of assuming that Yosef is a Lashon Hara type of person, so they said, oh, when we go to Mitzrayim and we look for Yosef, where did they go? The Medrash says they went, the first place they went was to the houses of ill repute. That's where they thought they would find Yosef, because he speaks Lashon Hara. So he's that type of person who's not makbid on what he uses his power of speech and his power of reproduction for, so that's where he's going to be. So the two things go together, the power of speech and the power of reproduction. In the month of Shvat, Rosh Chodesh Shvat, which was earlier today, Rosh Chodesh Shvat is a day that's mentioned in the Torah. It says in Parshas Dvarim, begins on Rosh Chodesh Shvat, right? Ba'ashtei asar chodesh be'achad l'chodesh. In the 11th month, on the first of the month, Dibar Ma'ish al Kol Yisrael, Ma'ish Rabbeinu spoke to all of Yisrael, Be'eres HaTorah Azayis. He explained all of the Torah to Klal Yisrael on the first day of the 11th month of Shvat. That's Sefer Dvarim. Sefer Dvarim begins on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. Sefer Dvarim, and a month and 7 days before Moshe Rabbeinu died. Sefer Dvarim, as well as Sefer Shmais, both begin with more or less the same word. Sefer Dvarim begins with the word Ela HaDvarim, Asher Dibar Moshe, right? Ela. And Sefer Shmais begins with not Eila, but Ve'Eila. Ve'Eila Shmais Ben Yisrael. So there's a connection between these two and the word Eila. It's brought down from the Mekubalim. I saw it in the name of the Megala Mukais, but I didn't find it in the Sefer Megala Mukais, so I don't know, I can't say for sure the Megala Mukais says this, but the Sfar Makdashim say that Eila is Rosh HaTevis Avak Lashon Hara. Avak Lashon Hara means the dust, or the powder of Lashon Hara. What does that term mean? What does that mean to us? What is the term Avak Lashon Hara? So it's an allusion to a Gemara in Bava Basra. Gemara in Bava Basra says, Kuf Samechei Meralef. The Gemara in Bava Basra says that a majority of people are not saved from the sin of theft every single day. A majority of people stumble in the sin of theft. A minority of people stumble in the sin of arayas, of illicit sexual relations, and everyone stumbles in the sin of avak lashon hara, of the dust of lashon hara. It's not necessarily literally complete straight out lashon hara, but something that's almost lashon hara, could be lashon hara, a question of lashon hara that everyone does. That's what the Gemara Bava Basra says. So that's Eila Shmais B'nai Yisrael. Ve'Eila Shmais B'nai Yisrael. And Eila HaDvarim, which is Rosh Chodesh Shvat, you see an allusion to Lashon Hara. Avak Lashon Hara. Avak, the Chassam Sefer says, Avak is Rosh HaTevis Eis Bris Kodesh, the sign of the Holy Covenant, of the Bris Milah. So there you have in Eila, which is Rosh Chodesh Shvat, which is the beginning of Shevavim, and the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, which is also Rosh Chodesh Shvat, you have Lashon Hara, an allusion to Lashon Hara, and an allusion to the Kedushas Bris Milah, to Shmiras HaBris, the Tikkun HaYisayit. So you see that there is a connection between Lashon Hara and to not speaking Lashon Hara, to refraining from Lashon Hara, to working on one's speech for proper use, and using the reproductive system for proper use as well. Shmiras HaBris and Shmiras HaLashon are things that are very connected. And the Sefer Yetzirah also says that the Bris Hama'or, what he calls the flesh, the covenant of the flesh, meaning the Bris Milah, is Mechuvin Keneged Bris Halashon, is corresponds to the covenant of the mouth. Just like the Bris Milah is supposed to be used for proper things and not for improper things, so the Bris of the mouth is also supposed to be used for proper things and not for improper things. And that's what we mean, that the month of Shvat is associated with the creation of fruit, of the creation of creating offspring. There's two ways that a human being can create offspring. One with his mouth and one with his reproductive organ. With the reproductive organ, a person can create children. Right? With the mouth, you can create Talmidim. The Gemara says, "Kol malamid ben chaveru Torah ki ilu yoldoi." A person who teaches the son of his friend the Torah, it's as if he gave birth to him. Right? So the mouth also has the ability to create pairs. The mouth and the reproductive organ both have the ability to create pairs. And in the month of Shvat, the idea is that we're supposed to focus on the correct way of creating pairs. Meaning, just like you don't want to use the bris milah to create, let's say, you don't want to create a guy by having relations with a non-Jewish woman, you don't want to create a mamzer by having relations with the rayas, right? You want to create a kosher Jew, so too with your mouth, you don't want to create bad things. You don't want to use the mouth for nivel peh, for lashon hara, for rechilos, for mitzvah shemra. No, you want to focus on using the mouth for creating pairs, for limud Torah, for tefillah, for chesed, for all the good things, and not for the bad things. And that's Chazal say that, the Shlomo Melech says this, the pasuk in Mishlei, Mavis v'chayim biyad loshein, v'yavel yeichel pirya. Mavis v'chayim biyad loshein. Death and life is in the hands of the tongue. A person's tongue can decide what his fate is going to be. Is he going to use his tongue for good? Is he going to use his tongue for bad? Is he going to use his tongue to continue creating offspring for good or not for good? V'yavel yeichel pirya. That if he uses his tongue properly, ayavel yachal peri, he's going to eat from the fruits of it. So see the fruit. That's what it means. The fruits, the creation of fruits. So that's the idea of chodesh shvat and shevivim, and that's what it has. So in the end of the day, it comes out that lashon that shevivim does have to do with lashon hara in the same way that it has to do with tikkun ayusai, because it's the same idea that you have an ability. A person has an ability, and you could use it for good or bad. And in shevivim, we want to focus on using it for good and doing tshuva for using it for bad. So the same thing with the bris milah, and the same thing with the mouth, that a person can use his mouth for good and bad, and we want to do tshuva for using it for bad and focus on using it for good. That's the introduction. Now, with these words said, we'll start what the Medrash says. Says the Medrash, opening words: Kol amalshin adam baseser, anyone who slanders his friend clandestinely, or the other girsa is kol amesaper lashon hara, anyone who speaks lashon hara, ein lechelak leilam haba, he doesn't have a portion in the world to come. Very strong lashon. Shneimer, it says in the pasuk, milushoni baseser ehu oisay atzmis, a person who slanders his friend clandestinely, oisay atzmis, I will cause him to constrict. I'm going to hold him back from going to Olam Haba. Because of Echad Omer, and another pasuk says, Orur Maki Re'ehu Basaser. Cursed is he who hits his friend clandestinely. And we're understanding that wisdom means to hit someone clandestinely. If I go over to you and I smack you in the face, it's not clandestinely. I just did it right in your face, right? So how can I hit you clandestinely? Rather, it doesn't mean literally that I hit you. It means that I somehow affected you adversely. But I did it paseser, I did it hiddenly, by speaking against you to somebody else, even if it's true, right? Lashon hara, even if it's true, I'm considered a makir re'ehu baseser, and the klalos that are brought in Parshas Kisovo, one of them says, makir re'ehu basoser, he gets a special klal, he gets a special curse from the Torah. Okay, so there's a few things to speak about over here. First of all, it's a very strong lashon. That anyone who speaks lashon hara, ein lechelak leilam haba. The Radal points out that it's also mentioned in a brisa in Derech Eretz Rabbah. It says over there, hamesaper lashon hara, ein lechelak leilam haba. A person who speaks lashon hara doesn't have a chelak leilam haba. Here it says kol hamesaper lashon hara. It's even stronger. It's more inclusive. Kol anyone who speaks lashon hara, ein lechelak leilam haba. The Radal makes another point. He says that the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva Perek Gimel Halacha Vav. The Rambam gives a list of all the different people who don't have a chelik in Olam Haba. And one of the people the Rambam lists is a Baal Lashon Hara. So the Radal says, oh, the Rambam also passes like this Medrash. And then the Radal asks in parentheses, it says, and it's interesting that all the Mefarshim, like the Kesef Mishnah, the Magen Mishnah, who their whole purpose of existence is, that they're trying to tell us, the reader, what are the sources to the Rambam's halachas, right? They bring all the sources. They don't point out what's the Rambam's source that a person who's a Baal Lashon Hara is Ein Lechelak Leilam Haba. But the Radal says, L'chorot, it's over here, Pekut Abeliezer. That's what the Radal's taina. I think it could be that the Radal is a shtickle wrong over here. Because I don't think this is the Rambam's source, and I don't think that the Rambam is going like our Pekut Abeliezer. Why? Because the Chofetz Chaim, Zatzal, in his Sefer, Chofetz Chaim, in Klal Aleph, Ber Mayim Chaim Ois Vav, he brings the Rambam, that the Rambam says a person who's a Baal Lashon Hara doesn't have a Chelek in Olam Haba. And he explains what the Rambam means. What does it mean to be a Baal Lashon Hara? So the Chofetz Chaim explains that a Baal Lashon Hara is somebody who's ragil, v'tamid, he's regularly, that's not really him anyways. That's like the picture of the Sheikhit of Radin or something.
Wait a second, in the video though, that they just discovered.
He doesn't look like that.
Yeah, well, he looks very close to that.
That's pretty close.
No, it is in the picture. I saw a picture and he looks like that. When he was younger, he looked like that. In the video, he's much older.
I don't know. I heard from descendants.
They say that there's no actual picture of him.
Heard from descendants of the Chofetz Chaim that they know that that's not him.
Yeah. Oh, I've heard the opposite also.
I heard that, yeah, but they'd say it's an old passport photo or something like that. But in the video...
They say that it was like Sheikhid and Radin or something.
I've heard that.
In the video, it looks awful like him.
It looks almost exactly the same like him.
I've heard that we've never seen a real picture of him.
The video, you could get it
between him and the Sheikhid. And we've never seen it. And then we found the video, but you say you like saw a picture of him as a younger man. I'd love to see that.
The video looked a little like David.
It was the white.
It looked almost the exact.
The
video that we saw looks almost exactly like this picture.
Yeah.
It's almost exactly.
It's hard to tell what he looks like in the picture, but the white beard is the same length.
Same eyes, nose, ears.
Not sure. I don't know.
It's the second video too.
It looks like almost the exact same person.
Look, because someone took a still from that video and they were selling pictures of the Chofetz Chaim in the mirror. It's a real picture of the Chofetz Chaim from the video. And it's not, it doesn't, if you look at it closely, it doesn't look so much like that.
The nose, the ears, the eyes, it's almost the
same. It could be, I'm wrong, I don't know. This is what I've been told.
Listen, photography has advanced so much because I remember in the 50s, somebody bought special film and took a color picture of somebody. We had to take it to develop it. We had to take it to a special camera store where they developed color film to make a color thing, and it was very expensive. And in the 80s, everybody had color film, and now nobody uses film. Now nobody uses film at all.
That's right.
So, I mean, you know,
this was a video.
Except for my mother-in-law, she uses film. And then she goes to the supermarket and says, "Do you guys still develop disposable cameras?" And they're like, "What is this?"
I have a couple of disposable cameras. I want to save them for my grandchildren. They should go in a museum.
Yeah. Al Kopanim, so the Chofetz Chaim in his Sefer, he brings the Rambam and he says that a Baal Lashon Hara is a person who's always speaking Lashon Hara. That's what he does all the time. Now, that's not exactly the exact same thing what our Medrash is saying. Our Medrash is saying anyone who speaks Lashon Hara. That sounds like if you spoke Lashon Hara once in your life, according to our Medrash, if you read it, no.
I hear the chiluk you're making, of course, but the Rambam. But I would ask.
But the Gemara says that everybody speaks Lashon Hara once in their life.
Yeah. No. Yeah. The Gemara says Avak Lashon Hara. The Gemara doesn't say actual
Lashon Hara. No. And then therefore nobody's gonna get it.
Almost so you want to say this is the Makar of the Rambam?
Most Jews never get. I hear Kolam Malshon Adam Masezer. The Rambam couldn't say, most people in his shul, almost every person in his shul, won't get a chelik on the Olam Haba. So he said a Baal, he means a Baal Lashon Hara.
Yeah, a guy who's a master of Lashon Hara.
Always speaking Lashon Hara. A master of it. That makes more sense. I mean, I can't imagine that the source says somebody who does this Avera once, that's it.
Yeah, here. You want to say it like that?
The Rambam, means
you're saying Kol Masar Lashon Hara is also Lav Dafka. It means a Baal Lashon Hara. So that this would be the Makar.
Because there's a Mishnah that we read. Kol Am Yisrael Yesh Chelek Ba'olam Haba.
Yeah. Sheim Ava'am Yechkol and Tzadik Niyetzim Matem Masi Yodah Yisbaer. Ve'elu She'en Lahem Chelek Ba'olam Haba. That's what the Mishnah says.
Okay. Then we can assume that first of all, person is speaking Lashon Hara continuously, because occasionally he goes to sleep. And...
No, it means like this is, you know, he's a politician or he's a radio talk show host. You know, that's like a real Baal Lashon Hara.
The guy who's always schmoozing during Kriyas HaTorah about other people.
Yeah.
And never actually listening.
Yeah, I once saw...
Just like I saw a few now.
What's it called? Oh, yeah, at least it's not the same exact expression used. The Rambam says Baal Lashon Hara and our Medrash doesn't use that expression.
Okay. That is Akasha on this.
It might sound like this. The Radal also brings from the Gemara in Erechin that the Gemara in Erechin has a legis. If a person speaks Lashon Hara, could he have a tikkun? So Gemara says, one opinion says, Siper yesh la takana b'divrei Torah. A person who speaks Lashon Hara, he can fix his avera by using his mouth for proper things and using it for divrei Torah instead of Lashon Hara, and that would be a tikkun for the avera. And the other opinion, the Gemara says, no, once you did it, ain la takana. So the Radha says that doesn't mean ein le takana that you've automatically lost your chelik in Olam Haba. Ein le takana means that you could get punished in Olam Hazeh and ein le takana to get saved from punishments in this world, but you could still get Olam Haba even if it's what the Gemara calls ein le takana.
Yeah, but you got to be careful because I'm sure we're going to learn that Miriam certainly didn't mean her brother no harm.
So we'll speak about the story of Miriam and. But we'll get there.
She wasn't out to put him down.
Yeah.
No harm.
So there's an interesting point over here. The Medrash brought two psukim that tells you that if you say Lashon Hara, ein lechelek lam haba. So the first pasuk says Oisai atzmis. I'm gonna constrict him. So okay, I can hear why that has to do with lam haba. But the second pasuk was a little bit more difficult to understand. It says. Now this is one of the klalas that they say at Har Eval. Cursed is he who hits his friend clandestinely, which we're interpreting to mean Lashon Hara. In fact, the Baal HaTurim over there says that Basaser is Gematria Lashon Hara. Right? Basaser is 662, and Lashon Hara is 661, plus the klal is 662.
Plus
what? The klal. You're allowed to be off by one, right? But Gematria is right. So 661 plus 1 is 662. But where do you see from that pasuk that you lose your chelik in Olam Haba? You just see that you're cursed. So the Radal says that the point of the of bringing this pasuk over here is not to tell you that you lose your chelik in Olam Haba. That you don't see from this pasuk. All you see from this pasuk is that the Torah looks at it as a bad thing. It's even, you know, it's not a thing. The first pasuk was in Tehillim. So you say, oh, it's only Midirei Seferim, it's Kabbalah or whatever. But this pasuk is a pasuk in the Torah. It's a pasuk deraisa that says that there's something wrong with saying Lashon Hara. Orur, a person is cursed. So the Dal says that Orur, the degree of prohibition of Orur in general is actually a more lenient type of prohibition. He brings a raya, and I have another raya to it. There's a Gemara in Saita on Lamed Zayim and Aleph. So the pasuk says one of the curses is Arur Haish Asher Yaseh Pesel Masecha Toyevas Hashem. Cursed is a man who makes a pesel masecha, the different types of idols, right, which are an abomination for Hashem. The Gemara says that's it. All he gets is an Arur. He just gets a curse. It should be mamish aser iser kareis. It should be iser. It's like one of the Ten Commandments. Why is it just a curse? So you see that when these things that are curses, they're just, it's just a curse. It's not such a stringent prohibition. And I found also another Gemara about that in Sanhedrin Daf Ayin Vavam and Beis. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that by talking about Arias, so Rabbi Kiva says that the prohibition of a person having relations with his mother-in-law only applies while his wife is still alive. Right? Just like there's an isser of marrying two sisters, right? But if you marry a girl and then she dies, you're allowed to marry her sister because it's only marrying two sisters while they're still alive.
Rachel
Edelstein
did that.
A lot of people have done that. David HaMelech did it. He married Merav, the daughter of Shaul HaMelech, and then he married Michal Bas Shaul.
Where do you see marrying Merav though?
What?
Where do you see the marriage taking place?
You don't see it in the pasuk. You see it in Chazal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody knows that if your wife dies, you marry her sister.
Right. So
made a movie about it.
No, but where do you see in Chazal that
fill the void?
Could be.
Where do you see in Chazal that he married Meir?
I don't remember offhand, but I'm pretty sure it's in Chazal.
No, not that long ago.
Seems like a different guy married her in the end.
Was it from a movie?
Who called it in Laish? Called it in Laish?
No, it's a different story altogether.
That's Michal.
Yeah, well, that's my wife told
it seems like Meir was supposed to get married to her, and then someone else got married to her. And then that person, I don't know, died or something. So David brought up her children. She brought up the children of the...
If you can marry your mother-in-law...
Well, I'll tell you. So Kiva holds... Rabbi Kiva holds that when a guy's wife dies, you're allowed to marry the mother-in-law. Because the mother-in-law is only prohibited as long as the wife is still alive. But Rabbi Kiva says, But if you marry your mother-in-law, you get this klala. It's a prohibition, but it's a lower level prohibition. The klala says,
so you're not allowed to marry a woman and her daughter. So if your wife, if your wife dies, can you marry her daughter from her first marriage?
I don't know. I'm not sure. From one second, I'm pretty sure that there are achronim that say that according to Rabbi Kiva that would be the same thing. But again, when I said that Rabbi Kiva says you're allowed to marry her, I don't literally mean you're allowed to marry her. I'm saying it's not the same degree of erva that, like, if you do it, you're chayiv, for a chamois, for your mother-in-law, you marry your mother-in-law, you're chayiv strefa. Right? It's a death, you get karis, whatever. Rabbi Kiva says, no, you don't get karis, you get strefa. All you get is an orur. It's also to do it, all you get is an orur. Orur sheichevim chesantai. That's the lashon of the pasuk. And he says that that's talking about marrying your mother-in-law after your wife had already died. That's what Rabbi Kiva says. So you see that Rabbi Kiva understands. I don't think we pass it like Rabbi Kiva anyways. But the point is that Rabbi Kiva understands that orur is a lower level of prohibition than a regular prohibition. So that's what I wanted to bring out from that Gemara. So over here, when we're learning Orur, Maki, Re'ehu, Basoser, we're not proving from here, Genom Haba, we're just pointing out that there is the Torah itself already speaks about the Isser of Lashon Hara. And it's at least an Orur. Okay, another point is like this. This Lashon of Orur, Maki, Re'ehu, Basoser, right? So I translated the word Basoser as clandestinely. Yeah. The Marzu proposes that no, that's not what the word basaser in this context means. It can't mean hidden clandestinely or whatever Lashon Hester or Halama. He says that Marzu says that's not what basaser in this context means. Rather, he says basaser is a Lashon of stira or soiser, meaning destruction. Stira is a destruction, or soiser is to destroy something, right? So this is what it means. Makay re'ehu basaser. He hits his friend to destroy him. He's hitting his friend destructively, meaning he's speaking badly about him. And that's what he says. Basaser means.
The other curses in that area there are all clandestine things
sins,
that you do.
That's true.
Moving your boundary, things like that.
Yeah. But he says that the word basaser in this context refers to doing it destructively. You're being soiser, you're destroying his parnasa, you're destroying his livelihood, you're destroying different aspects of his life by saying bad things about him. And he's going to bring a raya from the continuation of the Medrash, which we're going to see right now. Says the Medrash, Tedel Choshu Kain, you should know that this is true. Meaning, Pashtos, what it means is that you should know that it's true that speaking Lashon Hara is something that's destructive. We're not saying that speaking Lashon Hara is something that causes you to lose your chelik in Olam Haba, because you're not going to see that from the proof that we say. So it's talking about, you should know that it's something that's destructive. The Radal is different, Michelle. We'll say it in a moment. Well, how do you know? Boy Rei, come and see, min hanochash, from the serpent, the snake. Shehilshin lo Adam ula Ezrei. He slandered to Adam and to his helper, meaning to Adam and Chava. He said slander against Hashem. Or the other girsa is Shehilshin bein Adam l'Hakadosh Baruch Hu. He said slander between Adam and Hakadosh Baruch Hu. This is a reference to what we said in Perek Yud Gimel, that the snake told Chava that, you know why Hashem told you not to eat from the Eitz Hadas? Because He knows that if you eat from the Eitz Hadas, you're going to become as smart as Him, and He doesn't want any competition. So that's why He told you not to eat from it. So the Nachash was saying Lashon Hara, actually in this case it's like Moitzi Shemra against Hashem. Right? So the Nachash spoke out against Hashem. He said Lashon Hara against Hashem to Adam, to Chava. Ve'era Kodesh Baruch Hu, and Hashem cursed him, she'ehe macholoi ofer, that his food should be dirt. Shnemar ve'ofer teichal kol yemei chayacha, and you shall eat dirt all the days of your life. So you see that saying Lashon Hara is very destructive to a person. You say Lashon Hara, you get punished, like the snake got punished, that he's only going to be able to eat dirt. And we said in Perek Yudalad, actually, we said that the snake actually had 10 different curses that are irrevocable irrevocable curses that Hashem put on the snake, that even in the Yais Mashiach, the snake is going to keep those curses over there. So saying Lashon Hara is something that's irreversible, and the punishment for it is very difficult to overturn. And the Radal says that it's sort of, over here we're bringing a proof from the snake, because it's the same idea that the snake did something, and then even in the future, in Olam Kilu, what the snake's Olam Haba Kvachal would be, he doesn't get his punishment overturned. So too, a human being who says Lashon Hara, he'll lose his chelik in Olam Haba. So the Marzuh said that we're proving that Lashon Hara is destructive. Radal says that no, we're proving even more that not only is Lashon Hara destructive, but it also causes a person to lose his chelik in Olam Haba, which is the opening line that the Medrash said in this parak. So the Marzuh points to this line in the Medrash over here. We said that the Marzuh said that basoser doesn't mean clandestinely. Basoser means a person speaks Lashon Hara. Basoser destruct in a way that's destroying something else. It's gonna cause a downfall for that other entity that you're speaking about. Right? So something's gonna happen to that other entity, so to speak. Right, so he says that, well, if we're talking, we're bringing a proof from the story of the Nachash speaking about Hashem. So, did the Nachash speak clandestinely about Hashem? Obviously not, because you can't hide, you can't run, there's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide from Hashem. Right? So obviously the Nachash wasn't speaking, so to speak, clandestinely. So how can you say it's basaser? Rather, it means it was destructive. The speech that the Nachash said against Hashem was destructive. Okay, right there. Now, we're going to speak about a story where Bnei Yisrael said Lashon Hara about Hashem, and they got punished for it. This is a story in Parshas Ba'al Yischa. There's two stories in Parshas Ba'al Yischa that we're going to speak about tonight. The first one is this one. And this story basically is that they complain to Hashem that, does Hashem have the ability to give us food when we're in the desert? And then Hashem punishes them. The second story in Parshas Ba'al Yischa is going to have to do with Miriam and Aaron talking about Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, so what's the story over here of Klal Yisrael in the Midbar? Rabban Gamliel says, Yisrael Amru Lashon Hara Al Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Jews said Lashon Hara about Hashem. V'amru, and they said, Hayesh Ba'Hashem Koyach Lozun Eisonu Ba'Midbar? They said, does Hashem have the ability to sustain us in the wilderness, in the desert? Shenemar, as it says in the Pasuk. Now, there's two gear stories over here. One gear story is like this. Vaydaber ha'om be'elikim. It says in the Pasuk, Vaydaber ha'om be'elikim. The nation spoke about Hashem. Now, that Pasuk, Vaydaber ha'om be'elikim, that's the Yalkut Shemoni's gear story. The Yalkut Shemoni in Parshas Shemini has that gear story. It brings this Pasuk, Vaydaber ha'om be'elikim. That Pasuk is in Parshas Chukas. The context of Parshas Chukas is a different story where the Jews were complaining about the inefficiency of the, actually they were complaining about the efficiency of the man, that they said like, well, we eat this man stuff and then we don't go to the bathroom and it's like freaking us out and the man can't turn into all kinds of different good tasting things or whatever, and they're complaining about the man, right? That's the context in Parshas Chukas. Vaydaber ha'om be'elikim. So it's a different story. So what's that pasuk doing over here? We're going to be speaking about a story in Parshas Ba'al Yischa. The pasuk is a different story. So the Radal says, "Oh, it's a mistake. It's a Tos Sofer. It's a mistake, and it's supposed to say a different pasuk, which is the Girsa that we have in front of us over here, which I'll read in a moment." But the Zayis Ranan on the Yalkut Shemaini says that what we're proving a point from this pasuk that we're gonna take with us in this story. We're just bringing out a point from this pasuk. Because what did they speak about? They spoke about the man. They were complaining about the man. And when the pasuk relates them complaining about the man over there, Parshas Chukas, it says that they spoke against Hashem. But they didn't speak against Hashem, they spoke against the man. Oh, so you see that speaking against the man is as if you spoke against Hashem, because Hashem is the one who provided the man. That's what the Zayis Ranan explains, why the Medrash, according to his Gersa, brings the pasuk in Parshas Chukas, even though we're talking about a story in Parshas Ba'al Yischa. But the other Gersa is, Shenemar, it says in the Pasuk, a Pasuk in Tilim. Vaydabru Beli Kim, they spoke against Hashem. They spoke about Hashem. Omru, they said, Hayuchal Kel Larech Shulchan Bamidbar? Could the Lord set up a table of food, a feast, in the desert? Hein Hika Tzur Vayazev Vamayim Unucholim Yishtaifu. Well, behold, he has hit a rock, and water has flown out, and rivers and a river is washing away. Right, so you see that like Hashem really does have that ability. Fine. That they slandered his honor with the capital H. And the honor of Hashem is a consuming fire. It's a fire that can consume. So what was their punishment? Hashem gave them a punishment. Hashem sent forth a fire and it started consuming them from around. Shinar, it says in the Pasuk, Hashem, the nation was misunderstanding him. They were complaining bad in the eyes of Hashem. And a fire of Hashem consumed them, and it devoured the corner of the encampment. Right, so Hashem sent a fire to punish them.
This is also in Chukas?
No, this is in Parshas Baal Eicha. What we were bringing from Chukas, according to that gears that we brought up in Chukas, was just to show you that if you talk about against the man, it's as if you're talking against Hashem.
But this pasuk is also, this is the result of that pasuk, isn't it?
No, this pasuk is the story in Parshas Baal Eicha. The story of the Misoininim is in Parshas Baal Eicha.
The Tifar Bam ish?
Yeah.
Okay.
The pasuk in Parshas Chukas is a slightly different pasuk, slightly different story, where Hashem sent them fiery, where Hashem sent them the serpents, and then they made the and it started biting them, and the people got hurt, and then Hashem told them to make a copper snake. That's a different story.
This is when the quails came.
This is when the quails came in Parshas Baal Eicha with the quails, the slot, where, yeah. Holchu lahem ziknei.
Also, where the double nuns are.
Yes, right before this story. We'll actually get to that in a moment, in a few moments. Halcholahem zikne Yisrael etzel Moshe. The elders of the Jews came to Moses, the Amrullah, and they said to him, Moshe Rabbeinu, our teacher Moses, Tineinu kitzoin letivcha v'loyle eish eichla. Please, make us like slaughtered sheep, and don't bring us a fire that'll consume us. Meaning, they're complaining about the punishment. They're saying, please, Moshe Rabbeinu, daven to Hashem, get rid of the fire. We don't want to be hurt. We don't want to be punished with fire. We'd rather be hurt like slaughtered sheep. We'd rather Hashem send, meaning this is where the Radal explains it, we'd rather that Hashem send a plague and kill us through a plague than Hashem send a fire and start killing us through a fire. Yeah? Make sense?
The Rashi said that the fire there was like the same fire that killed Nadavavihu, and sort of just like took the soul out.
Yeah, Pirkei Avos also says that.
Maybe
well,
that's right.
We'll see exactly what that means in a few
that
moments.
They're saying here, but that fire we don't want. I mean, how can you say we want a
plague? What does it mean? We'd rather have a plague than a fire. Why? Death is death, right? If people are dying, so who cares if you're dying from a plague or dying from a fire? Why would you rather have a plague than a fire? So Radal says a very interesting idea. The Radal says that by Matan Torah, there was a fire that came. And it ended up that all the Jews died by Matan Torah when they heard the voice of Hashem. And then they came back to life. Right? Now Matan Torah, was that a punishment that they died? Pashtus not. It wasn't a punishment. It was on the contrary, Matan Torah was a happy occasion. It was a good thing. And Afal Pikin, still, they weren't able to withstand a divine fire. And the divine fire destroyed them, and they all came back to life. So here, where they're getting punished, they're ever so worried that they're not going to be able to withstand this punishment of a fire. And they said, we don't want to deal with fires. We had bad experiences with fires. Even on a happy occasion, fire mamish destroyed us. We don't want to deal with fire anymore. We'd rather have a plague than a fire. That's what the Radal's pshat. Very interesting idea. Moshe Rabbeinu saw the sorrow or the suffering of the Jews. Amad v'hispalal aleihem v'netar lei. And he got up and he prayed for the Jews, and Hashem listened to him.
We have different
girsas. Yeah, what's your
girsa? Hosha b'tzarasan shel Yisrael. Amad v'hispalal aleihem sh'ne'emar v'yitzak.
Sh'ne'emar v'yitzak Moshe el Hashem v'tishka ha'esh. Yeah, okay, it's the same thing. You just don't have the words of a Netar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Stam, it's interesting.
Which means he answered them.
Yeah, that Hashem answered them, yeah.
But
I mean, that's evident in the pasuk. No, that's evident in the pasuk. Vayitzak Moshe, actually, the pasuk, it's a mistake. It's supposed to say Vayispalal Moshe. V'yispala Moshe el Hashem, Moshe prayed to Hashem, v'tishka ha'esh. And the fire...
Netarlo means... that.
Yeah, v'tishka, right. V'tishka ha'esh, and the fire went down, the fire settled down, it sunk, and that means that Hashem listened to him and he got rid of the fire. Right? It's interesting. When I first read this last week, so I just noticed that this expression, Ra Moshe Betzarasan Shlo Yisrael Omad V'Spalal Aleihem, is actually very similar to an expression that we had in last week's Medrash, in the previous parak, when Yeshua was fighting, when they were fighting for by Givoin, it says the same expression, Ra Yeshua Betzarasan Shlo Yisrael. Ra Yeshua Betzarasan Shlo Yisrael, and here it's saying, Ra Moshe Betzarasan Shlo Yisrael. It's the same words. Interesting. Vatishkaish, right? And the fire went down. But like Shkia Sachama, where the sun goes down. So Vatishkaish, the sun went down.
Died down.
The sun died down. The flares of the sun abated. Right? Okay. So what does it mean that the sun went down? Says the Medrash. Not the sun, I'm sorry. The fire. Okay. The fire went down. Rabbi Yudah Omer, Rabbi Yudah says, that fire that came down from the heavens to punish and consume the Jews for complaining, for saying Lashon Hara about Hashem, what happened to it? Shakal v'aretz. It sunk into the ground. V'loy chazra l'mekoyma, and it didn't return to its place. Lashamayim, to the heavens. Actually, in Yalkut Shemayim, in Parashat Shemini, it doesn't have the word Lashamayim. And Parshas Baalei Yisrael does have the word L'Shamayim. But the point is that fire that Hashem sent down to punish them, it's not that Moshe Rabbeinu davened and then the fire went back up. Rather, what happened was Moshe Rabbeinu davened and the fire just went all the way down underground. It didn't go back up. Then the Midrash says, Ela nichnasa l'oil mayid. Rather, it entered the oil mayid. That's a stickle steer to what we just said. It said the fire didn't go back up. It sunk in the ground. Rather, it went to the oil mayid. We just said it sunk in the ground. Now you're saying it went into the oil mayid. So the Razal says that what it means both. It means it sunk into the ground. The fire sunk into the ground, and then it sort of traveled underground and came back out in the oil by the oil mayid in the Mishkan, in the Mishkan in the Midbar. And we'll see exactly what happened afterwards. But that's what happened with that fire. It sunk underground and then it went to the Mishkan and then it came back out. So it's both. It went underground and it came into the oil mayid. What's this idea? Why didn't the fire go back from where it came? It came down from Shemayim. So when Moshe Rabbeinu said get rid of it, so it should go back up to Shemayim. Why does it go underground and then come back to the oil mayid? What happened over here? So the Medrash Sifrei says that if it would have been that the fire would come down and then Moshe Rabbeinu would daven and the fire would go back up, so then the Jews would just go back to sinning like they sinned before the fire came back down. Now that the fire never really went back to its original place, it's still down here, it could come back and affect us any moment. Rav Yitzchak Kairo, the uncle of the Beis Yosef, in his Pirush on Chumash and Parshas Baalei Yisrael, so he says, he adds like another knetch to this, because the nature of a fire is that a fire is always going upwards. Right? A fire is always trying to go up. Right? So if the fire sinks underground, and the Jews know, they're aware of the fact that this divine fire, which comes for punishment, is underground, and the nature of fire is that it comes up, it flares up, right? So they're going to be scared to sin. Because it could just flare up any second, so that they're not gonna repeat the same sin, right? As opposed to if the fire would go back to Shemayim, so who said the fire is gonna come back down again? So then they're not scared. But if it goes down, then they're scared that it might come back up. An interesting point. Rabbi Leo Meisrael has another pshat in what's this idea of the fire? We'll get to it in a few moments. Okay, so the fire went to the oil moyed in the Mishkan. All the sacrifices which the Jews brought in the desert, that fire would come out and devour the sacrifices. Shinemar, because it says the pasuk, and this is the pasuk that's talking about the inauguration of the base of the Mishkan in the Midbar. It says, "Vateitze Eish Milafnei Hashem." A fire came out from in front of Hashem. Vateret Eish in Ksiv Kan. It doesn't say a fire came down from in front of Hashem. Ela Vateitze Eish Milafnei Hashem. A fire came out. It doesn't say came down, but it says came out, which implies that we're talking about a fire that was already there.
What about all the Kabbalists that were before that, though?
Nope. There weren't any Korbanos before that. This is the beginning of Korbanos. Now they're inaugurating the Mishkan. You're saying the Korbanos...
Mishkan was completed the end of Sefer Shmos. And you got all of Sefer Vayikra. Nothing's happened?
Machlokas, Rashi, Ramban.
Okay. What? No, Machlokas, Rashi, and Ramban. What?
They have a Machlokas as to the time. And no. And Ramban is holding, Yesh...
No, the Machlekes Rashi and Ramban is whether, let's say, Parsha Shmini is on the first day of Nisan or is on the eighth day of Nisan.
No, they have a very big Machlekes in Western, whether the Karbonos were necessary, before, were given before the Golden Calf or because of
That Ramban.
I'm just saying that the time... No. The time, something, Hakoshesh, for instance, which is in...
Right.
There is before...
It's true that there were... It's for sure true that there were Korbanos before the Mishkan. There were Korbanos by Matan Torah.
Yeah.
And by the end of Parshas Mishpatim, we see that they brought Korbanos. Atzilei B'nai Yisrael, they brought special Korbanos by Matan Torah. But, before Matan Torah, before the Mishkan was built, there was one fire, and this is now, from now on, it's this special fire. I thought you were asking something else, which we'll get to in a moment. But, so, we're bringing it right, the positive says Vateitze Eish, it doesn't say Vateret Eish, so you see that the fire was already there. It wasn't a special fire that came down from Shemayim. There was an interesting discussion over here, that Chazal tell us that the fire that came down in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu by the Mishkan, so that fire stayed down on the Mizbeach until they built Mishkan Shiloh, and then they made a new fire by Mishkan Shiloh. Right? So Mishkan Shiloh was after the 14 years of Yeshua conquering and dividing Eretz Yisrael, more or less. Right? During which time the Mishkan was in a place called Gilgal. Right? So here the Medrash says that the fire, all the Korbanos that they brought in the Midbar. What about the Korbanos? According to the Gemara, it's the same fire all the way till Shiloh. So it's not just the Korbanos that they brought in the Midbar. It's also the Korbanos they brought in the Midbar, and also the Korbanos that they brought in Eretz Yisrael all the years that the Mishkan was in Gilgal. So why does it just say Midbar? So it could be that the Korbanos that was brought in the Midbar are, that was the main thing. And the Korbanos, the 14 years in Gilgal, we're not like... No, we're not reckoning those 14 years as well. Like, okay, it's included in what we're talking about. We didn't have to speak it out specifically. Okay, the Radal doesn't really say that answer, but that's my answer, I think. Says the Medrash. V'oysah ha'esh, that fire, yotzasah v'ochla b'nei Aaron. It went out and ate the children of Aaron.
Wait, I have Korach before this. Either you skipped or I am.
Shenamar Vateitze Eish. This is one of the girsos. Some people don't even have. Yeah, so some people don't even have this girsa b'chol. But, I mean, this chronologically happened before the story of Korach, anyways. Mm-hmm. The story of Nadav and Avihu bringing what the pasuk says that they brought a Eish Zara, a foreign fire, in the Mishkan, and they got punished that a fire came out and consumed them and they died. So the Medrash says that was the same fire. This is that fire.
But it then came from below up.
One second.
And I thought that came from...
V'hi ha'esh ochlal adas Korach, and that was the same fire that consumed the congregation of Korach. Shenemar v'hi yotza me'es Hashem, a fire came out from in front of Hashem, where again it says yotza, it doesn't say yorad. So you see that this fire came and did other things during the Midbar, during the Jews' travels in the Midbar, where it came and took care of things. So that, what are you asking? So there is a big question over here that I thought you were going to ask us. The big question is that our story, the story of the Jews complaining about the man, and then Hashem sending this fire, right? The story in Parshas Baal Ha'ischa, when did it happen? So the simple understanding of when it happened was that it happened on It happened on, let's say, Chaf Kimul Iyar. Because the Parshas Bahalei Eschat says that the Anan, the cloud over the Mishkan, got up on Chaf Iyar, and it started, and the Jews started traveling, and then it says it traveled for 3 days in the Midbar. And then there's like, you know, there's like station identification, story break, the upside down nuns. It talks about Lahib and Usaya Arain, Vayar Mamesha, Kuma Hashem, right? Vunuch Yarmar, Shuba Hashem, Ruvay Safa Yisrael. And then it has this story of the Misoinanim, right? It says they traveled for 3 days. So if it, they started traveling Chaf Iyar, so 3 days, Chaf Al, Bez, or Chaf Bez, Chaf Gimel, whatever, right? So Chaf Gimel Iyar, Chaf Bez Iyar, that's when the story of the Misoinanim happened. They complained about the Mon, and then they got the Slav and they got the punishment, right? Of the fire. That's what it would seem, yeah? And then we said that this fire stayed underground and it went underground to the Oil Moed and it came back out it flared up again other times in the Midbar. Yeah, and one of those times was when it killed the sons of Aaron. One second, when did the story of the sons of Aaron happen? That happened when they first inaugurated the Mishkan, by Ibrahim Hashmini, right? On the eighth day of the Miluyim.
And that's
in Nisan. Either Aleph Nisan or Ches Nisan, but that's a Nisan, right?
Of the second year.
The second year is a month later. The story of the Misoinanim is a month after the story of Nadav and Avihu dying. So how could you say that then that fire later on went and killed Nadav and Avihu? We didn't, Nadav and Avihu died before this story. There's a chronological problem over here.
If you garis the Aaron story.
If you garis the story of B'nai Aaron, yeah.
Which I don't have.
Which the Yalkut Shemini has here, and there are Kisvei out of the Pirkei Avos that do have that Kirsa. So the Radal, so you're right. The best thing to do is take out the story. But if you have the story of here, what are you going to do? So the Radal asks this question. And the Radal has a whole answer. I don't exactly understand his answer, but the Radal has an answer. The Zayis Ranan, which is the Mogin of Ram's Pirush on the Yalkut Shemini, he has a different answer. The Yalkut, it's a Daichik. He says, you have to say that the author of this Medrash held that the story of the Misoinanim happened before the Mishkan was built.
Oh. Why is that bad?
What? Why is that bad? It's not bad. It's just that the Pesukim definitely don't say that.
Wait a minute. I don't understand. That's assuming that the Torah is in chronological order, like the Ramban holds, not like Rashi.
Well, what's assuming?
That the Misoinanim, because it happens after the Torah says that they traveled,
right,
means that the Misoinanim is happening right then and there.
Right.
Why can't you say that the Misoinanim is not related to that? Just like Hakoshish. Hakoshish, I think Rashi says, was
in the first year. Yeah.
Meaning, even though it's...
You're right. I'm not saying that you can't say that.
And also,
you're right. Much more sense you could say that if you want to say in Mukta Mocha Batar. You could say it's in Mukta Mocha Batar. But
that's Rashi, right?
Yeah, that's what Rashi holds. But if you say, but nobody says that. The Zayis Ranan is saying in Chiddush that the story of the Misoinanim happened before the Mishkan, before the inauguration of the Mishkan.
Because
that's what will come out according to this Medrash.
Right. You
could say that, but there's no other source that says such a thing. It's a big Chiddush. It's like it's a doichik to put that into the Pesukim like that. But you could say that theoretically, if you hold it, meaning
it's a theoretical possibility.
Yeah, I think, according to the Zayis Ranan, I think what you have to say, you could sort of compare this to a different story. I don't want to say it, but there's a different story in Parshas Bishalach where there wasn't any water and they complained about water and then they got. And then they got the rock, and Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock, and the water came out, right? And then there was a story in Parshas Chukas where they didn't have water, and they complained about the water, and Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock, and he got punished for hitting the rock. Yeah, Parshas, those are two different stories.
Mm-hmm.
In the first story, he was supposed to hit the rock. In the second story, he was not supposed to hit the rock.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the Parshas. Rabbeinu Yosef Bechor Shor and other Rishonim as well say that no, it's really the same story. He was never supposed to hit the rock. In Parshas Bishalach, we weren't focusing on what Moshe Rabbeinu did wrong. We were just focusing on the net outcome of what he did was that he hit a rock and water came out, so we spoke about him bringing water. Later on, in Parshas Chukas, we bring the exact same story, but we're focusing on a different point in the story that Moshe Rabbeinu did something wrong, and that's why he gets punished, that he doesn't go to Eretz Yisrael. That's what Rabbeinu Yosechar Shor says. And it's the same story. So, like, you could sort of say that the Mesoinenim is like the same story as something else in like Parshas Bishalach, where something like that. I don't know. I don't know exactly how to answer it.
That's a huge.
Because we don't have any hint of them complaining about the Mon before Iyar, before they started traveling. Parshas Vazagul. You know, the Chassam Sefer, the famous Chassam Sefer says, like, what's the significance of Lag Ba'omer? So the Chassam Sefer says, because when they went out of Mitzrayim, so they had their own provisions. They brought their Ugeis Matzois, right, etc. And that lasted from Tesvav Nisan, when they went out, all the way a little bit over a month to Yud Ches Iyar. In Yud Ches Iyar, that's when they ran out of food, and that's when the month started coming. Yud Ches Iyar. Right? And then, 6 days later, that's the story of the Mesoinenim where they're complaining that they don't have, they're complaining that they don't have, what's it called? Meat. And Hashem sent the slav.
So I'm sorry if it says something else also about Lag Ba'Omer.
Yeah, I know.
Wait, so, the...
so the Chasam Tovar is also saying that it was before Matan Torah.
No.
Yeah.
What?
Oh,
I'm off by a year. I'm sorry. I just made a complete mistake.
Okay.
I made a foolish mistake. I'm off by a year.
What do you mean?
The Chassam Sefer said that the month started coming on Yud Ches Iyar, first year.
Yeah.
Yeah, fine.
First year.
Yeah, first year.
Sivan,
that's when the month started coming. Yeah. When they complained, that would have been Chaf Gimel Iyar, the second year.
How could it be the second year? They took matzahs out of Mitzrayim.
Yeah.
Lasted about a month.
Yeah.
Then complained in ER a few days
No, they didn't complain. We didn't say they complained. When the man started coming.
Mitzrayim is a few days after the man started coming.
No, that's what I'm saying. Mitzrayim is not a few days after the man started coming. Oh. It's over a year later.
Okay.
Because it's in the second year.
Well,
after Mitzrayim is the second year. I made a mistake. I made a cheshbon. It was the same day or the month. It was the same month, but a different year. And we said last week that they didn't ask for Mon, because they thought they were going into Eretz Yisrael right away, so they didn't think they would need to ask for Mon b'chol. And Hashem gave them the Mon even without them asking it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it wasn't mentioned in the Seven Wonders, because the Seven Wonders was only things that they asked for, the tzaddik asked for, and they got. But this wasn't something they asked for, because they didn't even think they would need it. So it's a question. It's a question. How do you understand that that fire that happened in the story of the Mesoinenim afterwards went and killed Bnei Aaron? If you don't have the gears of Bnei Aaron, like your gears still in Echanami, that it's better. Could be it's better to not have that gears of Bnei Aaron.
With the sons of Aaron, did it say it came down from heaven, the fire?
No, it doesn't say it came down from heaven. It says, V'teitze Eish, Milifnei Hashem.
Which I think we always understood is come down from heaven.
Right, but we hear the Medrash is drawing a distinction between Vateitze and Vateirid. It says it came out. It didn't say Vateirid, meaning it descended. That's the point of the drush over here. Says the Medrash. V'ein adam nifta min ha'olam ad sheyavor elav mi'osa eish shaka ba'aretz. A person will never die, nifta min ha'olam, he won't expire from this world until that fire passes, that the Shishaka Ba'aretz, that fire that was sunk into the ground passes over him. Shinema tzal pasuk v'tishka ha'esh. Right? So a person is only a person before he dies, that fire is going to come up from underground and is going to. You found it?
I think so, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
There's a mistake in there.
We'll see it after the share.
I found another mistake also in the book.
So
no.
We'll speak. What's it called? Vatishka Eish, that fire that sunk underground. So the manager is saying every person who dies right before he dies, that fire comes out and affects him. So I mentioned before that Rabbi Yomi Izmir has an interesting shot in this. What's the idea of the fire coming out and punishing them, and then instead of going back up, it went underground, and then it flared up a few other times during the Midbar? So we said that it was a deterrent to get them scared so that they won't sin anymore, because the fire could just come back up. Rabbi Leo Meitzer says a different pshat. He says that there's an idea that Hashem never sends something down from Shemayim that's completely destructive. There's always going to be a creative, a positive aspect of something that Hashem sends down from Shemayim. There's always going to have some sort of positive aspect to it. So he says, this fire that came down, if it only came down just to punish the people by the Misoinonim and go back up to Shemayim, it would be a completely negative thing. So Hashem had to keep it down in this world and allow and make it flare up again in later points in history in order to make it that it'll have certain positive aspects. For example, what else did it do for us? It consumed our karbonis. It showed us that Hashem accepted our karbonis. So that's a positive thing. It ate up the congregation of Korach, which means that it took people who were trying to get other Jews to go off the proper path, and it destroyed them, thereby saving the Jews who would have otherwise been swayed. So it was another positive thing that it did. So it says that's also the reason why Medrash says that everyone who dies, this fire is going to affect him first.
Doesn't he fall into a pit?
Because he says that when a person dies, this fire comes out and gives him a certain tsar. We've spoken, I think we mentioned this idea before, that when the neshama separates from the guf, the neshama goes through a lot of suffering. And that suffering itself has a positive aspect because it's a kapara for averus. So right before a person loses his chance to ever get a kapara, right? Because once you can't do tshuva when you're dead already. So once you're about to lose your chance, so you get another piece of yisurin, so that when the person dies, the neshama will go to a good place in Olam Haba, and he'll get a kapara for his averus. So all these things are good uses of this fire. So that's why Hashem made the fire stay down here instead of returning back up to Shemayim. Okay, what time is it?
It is
8:30.
So
maybe we'll stop over here, I think. Fine, we'll stop over here.
Falling into the mouth of the Ahareds and the fire consumed them?
What was it? Korach.
Going for the hospitality. There were two
punishments. Some people were swallowed by the Aretz. That was Korach and his family. And then 250 was with the Aish. Yeah.
It's good to have. Right. So wife takes some cookies home with you.